I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Where I pick the podcast.
And I shut my cake.
And today we are going to be discussing the 20th episode of the 6th season of Supernatural titled The Man Who Would Be King. Jamie, what did you think?
I mean, I feel like he theoretically could be king, I guess. Okay, so I feel like this is an episode that I can tell why people were excited for me to see.
Yes.
Specifically that I've said a lot of things that just kind of happened in this episode.
I happen to think there are two reasons why people were very excited for this episode and why so many people wanted a live reaction. Number one, this episode is just kind of iconic. I've never met a person in fandom who does not like this episode, and I assume you understand why. And also, yes, because you've also talked a lot of shit.
And normally the saying is talk shit, get hit. This time, talk shit, get hit with a psychic stick, I guess.
This is like Dean being rewarded by the narrative, but it's you.
Objectively, the least Dean-coded person you've ever met. It is truly wild how correct some jokes I've made up have been. That's the other thing. Like, I feel like the first 5 seasons of this show were really distinct from a Jamie's prediction standpoint in that I made a lot of predictions, and those predictions were correct. I wasn't making predictions here. I was just saying shit as a joke, and it just...
To be fair, you did have jokes in Kripke era that also became relevant.
Yeah, but I feel like whether it started as a joke or not, it ended as a serious prediction.
Mm-hmm.
I just made jokes the entire way through the season. Like, I feel like very little of this I actually made a serious prediction about. I was just like, I feel like I had mentioned at some point that, like, I hypothesized, like, well, Cass could have pulled Sam out of hell.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only canonical character that we know can pull people out of hell.
Although apparently this time it did not take the other 200 plus angels that it took initially.
I think the difference is this time he was let in.
Mm.
When he got Dean out of hell, the demons didn't want Dean out of hell. So
yeah,
he had to fight his way through the demons to get to Dean in hell.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Crowley probably just, like, the bit that Crowley needed Cass for was not the getting Sam out of hell thing. It was getting Sam out of the cage thing.
Yeah, because that's where I think the difficulty comes in.
Yeah.
It was like last time there wasn't a cage involved.
No. He just had to get in and out of hell. Whereas this time the demons weren't against him, which is why he didn't need the extra manpower, but Crowley did not have enough power on his own to just pull Sam from the cage. Apparently, neither did Cass.
Yeah.
Which I feel like I also made a joke about at some point. I was like, I feel like I know something about, you know, Cass just leaving Sam's soul behind. And I feel like I have said something about that at some point.
You've also definitely talked about Cass working with, like, how did you put it? I think you basically just said, I feel like Cass could be working with the sort of person you wouldn't expect him to be working with.
Yeah.
Like, I can't remember the exact terms you used, but you definitely said...
I feel like that is literally in 603, because that's just the episode that I've re-listened to as part of my proofing
project. Because
it's the next one coming out, not to date the podcast. But basically, like, I feel like in that episode, I literally said, like, I feel like they're setting Cass up for a villain arc.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe he's working with someone that is not a good person to work with. Like,
yeah. I don't remember if you ever specifically said Crowley.
I never said Crowley.
Okay.
I don't think I ever specifically said Crowley.
God, but imagine if you had.
But I definitely did say, like, I feel like he's working with someone that he maybe shouldn't be working with.
And on the topic of Crowley, I do have a note this episode that I do think is quite fun, which is, oh, look, it's the Inhuman Monster Torture Science Lab.
Fucking called it.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not strictly torture, but it is.
Oh, I don't know.
It's a lot more than just torture. Like, to call it just torture is to be a little bit blasé about
it
the impact.
Science.
But
they're revolutionizing the scientific knowledge of monsters right now. Like,
and
is it ethical? No.
And we do literally also get the line from Crowley where it's like, oh, this blah, blah, blah does this thing. And he's like, does that mean anything? No, it's just interesting.
Oh, I think the actual line is, apart from the obvious erotic value.
Always an icon. I know a lot of people are like Cass stans, but I do think, like, I stan Crowley more. He's a funky little dude. He fits the criteria. Like, he's hitting all of those checkpoints, you know what I mean? Like,
I know exactly what you mean.
He's funky, he's very clearly queer, like,
yes.
You don't get that funky without being a little bit queer. He meets all of the required objectives.
To be a Blorbo for Jamie.
Yeah.
he doesn't hurt that he's also played by Mark Sheppard, who you already love from other medias. And also, I feel like this is a great time to pepper in the information that if you didn't know already, this is a Bedland double special. So Ben Edlund wrote and directed this episode. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Sarah Gamble gets the final okay as showrunner, but like this man had a vision and he saw it executed.
And I will just say that I do literally have the note. This show should be about Cass and Crowley only, Ben Edlund, at some point probably.
Yeah.
Like, because it's very clear to me what exactly he wanted to do with this, and what he wanted to do with this is pitch a new show, a revolutionary buddy cop about Cass and Crowley, which I have pitched before.
And you know what? That pitch will only get funnier.
And this kind of falls into the territory of, I don't make predictions, I make jokes, and sometimes they come true. Did I predict this? No. Did I not predict this? Also no. I did predict this. I just didn't predict this as a prediction for this.
Give them what they want, but in a way they're not expecting it. Okay. Did you have anything else this episode that was stuff that you had guessed at before?
Here's the thing. I was watching this episode and I was like, I feel like I know all of this. I feel like watching this, I was just like, I have predicted basically every element of this episode at some point. But I can't remember. Like, I just, like, you know when you watch something and you're like, I feel like I knew that.
To be fair, this episode has come up so many times in discussion already to this point, whether it's with me or whether it's with other people in the squad or other guests that we've had on. It's an episode that I reference all the time. Whether or not I specify that it's this episode or not, there are definitely things in here that you would recognize from previous discussion, even if you don't realize that that's what it's from. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I am absolutely certain that I have quoted the line, am I the only game piece on the board that doesn't underestimate those denim wraps nightmares? Like, I have definitely quoted that.
You've 100% quoted that. I did write it down because I did recognize it. Even just joke stuff. Like, me and Noah made the joke about fucking Demon Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And we then get Demon Bobby.
Ellsworth, as a concept, is maybe my favorite thing.
Not to stan a character that's on screen for literally 30 seconds, but like, Loki, I stan him. Like, he is doing God's work. Well, not really. He's doing Crowley's work, which is basically the same thing.
Literally, I love Ellsworth. I think he is such a fun concept. I think the actor who plays him, like, fully embodied the role in the most perfect way possible. He's giving Bobby, you know?
He's giving Bobby, but to the left.
Yes.
What I get, though, from this episode is the fact that Samuel was the second choice.
I know.
Which I think is so funny. But also, like, I feel like I've said something about Samuel at some point that is relevant to this.
I think that what's interesting is that Crowley is the one who suggests Samuel. So, like, potentially that opens the door for the fact that Samuel is not in heaven, but is in fact in hell.
Exactly.
Which is something that you've alluded to before, mm-hmm. because I think you were like, well, how do we know that he was in heaven? And it's just like, I don't know, like, we just kind of assume that because we're not given a reason to think that he would be in hell. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that maybe lends itself to that.
Like, and that's what I mean. Like, I feel like I've said so much shit that is relevant to this episode, but I just can't pinpoint any of it because I've said so much random shit on this podcast. And it's all of the shit that I said as a joke. Like, it's exclusively joke predictions this week that we're getting paid off for.
This episode, I fucking adore it. It is one of my all-time favorites. And part of the reason why is because it has this, like, element of, like, just the way that the story is told is so different to the way that a structure of a supernatural episode is normally told. I think part of it is because it has that, like you said before, like, buddy cop energy. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it almost feels fanficky.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And so I feel like that's maybe why it feels like, oh, so many of my jokey things came out in this episode. And it's like, yeah, it's because the places that you like to play is in, like, the obscure secondary characters get their own full arc. Like, going to space, you know? And actually, like, even that in of itself sort of becomes relevant at a later day. And so I bet you're excited for that. And, like, the idea, like, the concept of fan fiction and, like, playing with your secondary characters and, like, giving them their own things, like, is relevant to Supernatural in and of itself in, like, both a meta way but also in the primary text. So I'm not shocked that you sort of, like, settled on so many things, because also I've said to you before, like, this season in particular is so interesting retrospectively.
Mm.
And this episode is the point where you go,
Oh. It begins to become retrospective.
Yeah. And if you, now knowing what you do about like Cass and Crowley and sort of the timeline of them working together and like how and why and when, going back and looking at the rest of the season again starts to make a hell of a lot more sense. And you get to see all these little bits and pieces that they have peppered in there for you so that you can actually pick up on it. And for me, watching this season like more intently than I normally would, and particularly like with this episode in mind as that pivotal point, has been so fascinating. And to that end, Jamie, I have such an exciting thing to share with you. You have no idea how excited I am right now.
It's your only ever contribution to fandom?
Ooh, something like that. Okay, so as like part of that like overall concept of like, obviously Cass has sort of been like sneaking around in the background, hanging out with Crowley. Crowley like seduces him, for want of a better descriptor, but honestly, I think it's actually kind of an apt descriptor anyway. The 612 phenomenon.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm ready for this, so.
What is really exciting is there is an example of it in this episode that I can point to so that you have like, hopefully you have like it clearer in your mind rather than going back to other episodes. So, Supernatural, as a show, when you're thinking about the way that it is directed, the kind of shots that are used, it is pretty similar across the board, right? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of it is sort of like mid to close-up shots. It's typically focused on, like, the character's faces, unless it's an action shot, in which case it's usually, like, the camera is moving quite quickly, it's in amongst the action. You don't often get a lot of wider shots or further back shots. You also don't often get shots that are shot from above or below, unless they're making a specific point.
Yeah.
From at least 612 onwards, when they are talking about stuff that would be relevant to Cass, like for plot reasons, the camera angles change because you're watching it from Cass's point of view. Like in the episode where they're learning about Eve, like where she gets raised at the end, I think that may be 612, which is where my whole like brain exploded and I messaged a huge message to the pod squad and everyone was like, oh my God, Beth, what the fuck? When they're talking about Eve, every time they're talking about a plot point, the camera is top down because Cass is watching them talk about it. He is getting all of this information invisibly. Like the audience is literally watching from his POV. And then there is in a later episode, a scene where Cass, Dean and Sam are all talking together. And there's like a wide shot where like the camera comes out from behind a tree and you're like, oh my God, it's Crowley's POV because he is watching Cass interact with the boys. And there's like other scenes where Sam and Dean are talking and like the camera moves out from behind a pillar in a house and it's like, oh, Cass is watching them. And it's all information that you find out later that Cass and or Crowley has.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and actually the example of it in this episode is when they're confronting Cass and he's stuck in the ring of fire, like the angel, the holy fire, the holy fire. When he tells Sam, like, Sam, I'm the one who raised you from perdition. And then he's like, I had no choice. And Dean says, no, you had a choice. You just made the wrong one. And I was like, oh, damn, that's literally Cass's one fear. If, like, you want to talk about, like, the themes of this episode, his big fear is, like, making the wrong choice, right? Now that he has the ability to make choices. And then after that, there is a pulled back shot from higher up. And specifically after that, it goes back in really tight on particularly Cass and Dean's faces. And Cass is like, it sounds so simple when you say it like that. Where were you when I needed to hear it? And Dean goes, well, I was there. Where were you? And I was like, wow, it's literally a breakup. But then that's when Crowley's demons show up. And Cass is like, you have to get out, you have to get out. And it's because Crowley's POV is looking down, sees Cass is trapped with Winchesters around him, and he sends backup. And it's literally the only shot in that sequence that isn't like a close or a tight close-up. That one pullback scene, and then like immediately 30 seconds later, Crowley's backup is on the way. And I was like, oh my God. The 612 phenomenon. It continues. It's so interesting. And I have been going mental. Do you understand why I was so excited?
It is not the sort of thing that I would ever notice.
I know. And I've never noticed it. That's why I was like, and I've never seen anyone else talk about this. Like, I've seen people dissect that scene where Cass is trapped in the holy fire and talk about how the way that it is shot is really interesting depending on Cass's relationship with each of the three characters. Like, there aren't very many, like, close-up or tight close-ups on Bobby, but there are a significant amount on Dean and then, like, fewer for Sam. So depending on the intensity of the relationship, there are more or less close-ups and you can kind of, like, look at it from, like, that sort of analysis perspective, and that's really interesting. But I've never seen anyone talking about the pullback shots. And, like, there are so many through the season. And, like, once you are looking for them, they are abundantly obvious. But, like, I've seen this show, like, I've watched this season a couple of times now, and I've seen all the meta about it. I've never seen anyone talk about it, which is why I was losing my mind.
To be fair, though, losing your mind is kind of just your natural state.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's really interesting, but I think it's definitely something that, like, I can't really talk about because I wasn't looking for it.
No, I know.
So I can't think of any examples because I don't remember shot choices that specifically for any individual episode. But it is really interesting. And I think this is a really, like, it's a really interesting indicator of, like, the differences in show running between Kripke and Sarah Gamble. And I think this does tie into the Sarah Gamble long con, our favourite words in this podcast. Because Sarah Gamble, up to this point, and I think she continues to be almost a more thoughtful showrunner.
Certainly more detail-orientated, yeah, I think.
In terms of the way she lays out her plots, in terms of the way she lays out our stories, in terms of the way that she fits all of her puzzle pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
She feels a lot more present in the story than Kripke does, which is fucking hilarious considering that you could kind of categorize Kripke as like an absent father.
Genuinely. No, I think that if you want to like look at the way that the stories are kind of structured, I feel like Kripke kind of felt like you were always sort of looking at the forest and like focusing on like the bigger, like sort of overarching plot that is like, you know, where is dad or whatever. Whereas I feel like particularly season 6 has been like looking at the trees, looking at the trees, looking at the trees, looking at the trees. And then all of a sudden this episode, you're like, look at the forest. And like that zoom out, I think is so impactful because you have been just stuck looking at the fucking trees for so long. And like you knew that there was a forest around you. Like we've heard it mentioned, they've brought it up, but being like explicitly shown, like you basically, they hold your hand and they take you a couple of steps backward and they say, actually look at the forest. And it's so interesting. And I'm so glad that it was done in this way, because I think that, you know, last week we talked about the villainization of Cass and how you were feeling about it. And I didn't want to tell you too much before we'd seen this episode, but my point that I was trying to make was like, I understand why you feel that way, but I think that this episode does an incredible job of showing the nuance behind Cass's decisions. And like, yes, you can argue that he has made incorrect choices, but the reasons why he made them are entirely understandable and you can see how he justified those decisions. And so like, he's not just a villain. Like, he is more complex than that and they have kept him likable. Like, it's not like you're going to do, like, a complete 180 and you're like, oh, actually, like, I hate him now. They haven't completely villainized him. They've not pushed him, like, beyond, like, a point. He is still very much a likable character. They've gone to an extent to make his choices understandable given the context. Like, previously, when we only had the information that, like, Dean and Sam had, it's like, yeah, that seems like a terrible thing to do. Now with this episode, we have, as Cass puts it, the whole story. Like, he's told us everything. And so now we can see it all laid out, like all of his decisions, while they may not be fully justifiable, they may still not be like the correct decisions, they do make a hell of a lot more sense.
I do think my opinion about last week's episode still does hold though. You know, obviously this does sort of retroactively justify it, but I feel like just because it's now retroactively justified doesn't erase the sort of stance that they seem to have taken. So I certainly see what you're saying. Like, I think it's really good that they did give him complex and justifiable motivations, but I do think it doesn't completely erase the sort of implications of last week. But what I find really interesting about this episode is the way that Dean is acting so disappointed. Because, like, I think he has a justifiable reason for being disappointed, but also, like, babes, the double standards are real.
I know.
Like, I know. My dude, my bro, my guy. You have worked with Crowley before. You have fucking made a demon deal before. Sam has made or tried to make a demon deal before. Sam fully got seduced by Ruby and you still forgave him.
Yeah, I think that this particular episode is particularly interesting for Dean because number one, it's just so gay. Like I don't know how you watch this episode and don't think, wow, they were intentionally writing Destiel here, because like every single time someone brings up the Winchesters, Cass makes it a singular. Like, Crowley specifically says while he's, like, going through his whole speech and trying to, like, seduce Cass into this idea that he has about them working together, he specifically says, I know of two eerily suited teen beat models. Two.
Two. And then Cass goes, no, not Dean. Brackets, singular. Like, what
Sam,
do you mean?
He's fine with.
Yes, you can use Sam all you want. But Dean, you leave him the fuck out of this. You know, or like, when he is still, like, invisible and Cass is watching Sam and Bobby and Dean argue about whether or not Cass is trustworthy. And he literally says, like, and the worst part was Dean doing his best to remain loyal with every instinct telling him otherwise. And, like, the soulful fucking gaze. He does not give a shit about Sam or Bobby, but, like, the sad little, like, pouty face he makes as Dean's walking away. It's just...
What is wild to me is we now know canonically he has pulled both of them from hell. So he can no longer justify his fixation on Dean with, I share a more profound bond with him because I pulled him from hell.
No, that is now irrelevant.
It's a moot point. They're even on that one.
And the way that Dean says to Sam, that makes you Lois Lane? Like, babe.
I think you're misinterpreting the fucking a little bit there, bro.
My dude, you referred to yourselves as Thelma and Louise. What do you mean? That makes Sam Lois Lane. I'm getting distracted. My point originally was that I think it's a really interesting episode for Dean because do you remember earlier on in the season, we were talking about Dean's relationships with Sam and Bobby and how they've kind of been disrupted by this sort of notion of Sam being back for a year and neither of them telling Dean and sort of, you know, letting him just stay retired sort of thing. We talked about how at this point, Cass is the only character left that Dean feels like he can trust because he is the only character who hasn't betrayed him in some fundamental way. And you made the joke, oh, better queue up and Cass betrayal. And I was like, ha 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 ha. And on the inside,
Jamie,
I was
with
like,
her funny jokes.
On the inside, I was like, ah ha ha ha.
As I said, I feel like I've made a lot of jokes about this shit. And it's just like, they've all just kind of happened.
It really was interesting for me because then, yeah, coming back to this episode, I was like, okay, but this is when he realizes that Cass has actually also betrayed him. And so for Dean, this isn't just, oh, Cass has betrayed me. This is now literally everyone that I would consider closest to me, excluding like maybe Ben and Lisa, has lied to me and betrayed me. And this poor fucker, like, he didn't ask for any of this. And like, I actually want to specifically point out, do you remember back in 413, the time travel episode?
Yeah.
And I was talking about how I thought the angel sent Dean back in time so they could hover invisibly and listen to Azazel's little speech. Okay. At some point, I can't remember if it was during that same discussion or another episode, I was talking to you about how Cass has been caught out before for like listening in on conversations.
And then repeating verbatim.
And this is what I was specifically referencing. So obviously, like, Bobby is talking about that means we're dealing with a Superman that's gone dark side. We have to be cautious. We have to be smart and maybe stock up on some kryptonite. Then later in the episode, the way that he gets caught out is by saying Superman going to the dark side. Mm. And Dean is the one who catches him out immediately. Like,
yeah.
Bobby and Sam don't really react in the same way.
No.
But Dean's face goes through the five stages of grief in about 5 seconds. And, like, the shift is actually so, so phenomenal. And I wanted to bring this up because it comes right off of the back of Dean saying, we never should have doubted you. I just hope you can forgive us.
Yeah.
And like, this is one of the only times that Dean isn't right.
Because he's blinded by love.
He gets absolutely played by the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And what is so interesting to me is that I didn't really think about it until I was taking that note. But of the times that Dean isn't right about things, like, you know, we've talked about how his gut instinct is often rewarded, like about Ruby, for example, you know?
Yeah.
Of the times that Dean is wrong or Dean gets tricked, a lot of the time it's Cass related. And like, that's really interesting, like from a character perspective, obviously, because he's got his rose-tinted glasses on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also really interesting from a meta-analysis perspective of like Cass being the spanner in the works that keeps fucking everything up.
Like, Dean's meant to be correct, except...
Yeah, exactly. Like, Dean would be correct, except that Cass is not playing to the rules. And I just think that that is like really, really fascinating. And obviously, like, Dean, he is sticking his neck out for Cass in this episode. It gets to a point where, like, obviously at the start, Bobby and Sam are both like pretty heavy on it. And Dean is like this is Casper talking about. He's our friend. He has gone cut and bleeding to the mat for us so many times. Like, this is Cas. Don't we owe him the benefit of the doubt? At least. He's so determined that Cas would never. And so then when he does, it is ultimately more impactful to Dean than it is for either Bobby or Sam, who were already considering this as a possibility. Whereas Dean was so much in like flat out denial of it even being a potential that when it turns out that that is true, it hits him so much harder. And personally, I think because so much of this season has been told from Dean's perspective, I think it impacts the audience harder than if we'd had a season told from Bobby or from Sam's perspective.
While we're talking about Jamie being accidentally psychic this week, there was a song that I got you to listen to because I listened to it. It's by an artist called Greta Ray. It's called The Brink. And it is kind of a really devastating Destiel song if you listen to it through that lens, which is why I forced Bethany to listen to it for me.
And you know what? It was devastating.
And you know what? I think it actually becomes like really super duper relevant this episode because in the song, it talks about how like we're bruised and bleeding.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you mean like cut and bleeding to them? Like,
Yeah. Yeah. Do you remember when Speak Now Taylor's version came out and I lost my mind over castles crumbling? This episode. Mm-hmm. This motherfucking episode. Oh boy.
Oh buddy.
But yes, no. There's lots of good Destiel content in this episode. This gets used a lot. Specifically like
that. Oh, you mean beyond the fact that they just cut to Dean fully just staring at Cas every like 2.5 seconds?
Oh my god. Okay. Oh my god.
Oh it's god. The nose ring. It changes everything.
Oh my god, yes. He literally cannot stop.
I understand that they have to like cut to somewhere, but do they have to constantly just be cutting to Dean just fully staring at Cas?
But you know what is so funny? It literally leans right into that trope of like, they only look when the other one's not watching. Like, the way that Cas is just fucking watching him rake leaves, poorly, I might add. Those leaves are barely being raked, but he just stands there for God knows how long, just watching this man in jeans rake some leaves in his pseudo wife's house. It's just so funny to me, especially like Jensen is essentially playing Dean as if Dean is an extra in the background doing yard work while Crowley seduces Cas. Like, it's so funny.
Because what's so funny about that scene is, yeah, it's literally Crowley seducing Cas, except for the man they both want to be in is raking leaves in the background.
I know, it's so funny. It's like the triangle of oh fuck, what's it called?
Triangulation of desire.
That's the one. Crowley's like, well, I can't have Dean. What's second best?
I could seduce his boyfriend.
Seduce his boyfriend and break his heart. If I can't have Dean, no one can.
Look, it's just really funny to me that like, and maybe this is like the Sarah Gamble long con of it all, but like, Cas is actually making kind of similar decisions to decisions that Dean himself has made before.
Yeah.
But it's framed as like, oh, well, Cas is making the biggest mistake of all time.
Yeah.
Whereas it was framed as, oh, no, Dean made the correct decision at the end of last season.
It's fine when Dean does it. Mm-hmm. It's really like the plot of Supernatural. Quite genuinely. If you think about like Dean making a demon deal versus Sam trying to make a demon deal. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's fine when Dean does it. Seems to be the take of the show because the show is told through Dean's lens.
Yeah.
So you're inclined to agree with him.
Yeah.
And I just think it is really, really funny. And specifically what I think was so interesting about the way that Dean knew something was up when like Cas is in the Ring of Fire or whatever. And he's just like, just look me in the eye and tell me you're not working with Crowley. And I'm like, the way Dean knew something was up. Because Cas wasn't eye fucking him like normal. Like, are you kidding me? We're used to them staring into each other's eyes for 12 soulful seconds, you know? And so the fact that Cas could barely look at him, he's like, this man, something is up.
That sucks.
that's fucking sus. But the way that, like, because, you know, like, that's one thing. That's, like, acting decisions and that's the dialogue. Like, that's one thing.
That's the acting choices, the, 101.
The way the direction and the editing of this episode made it so clear that, like, Dean is different to Sam and Bobby is crazy to me.
It's, like, explicitly in the text.
It's explicitly in the text, but it's not just the text. It's in literally every element of this episode. Even Dean saying to Sam and Bobby, like, no, you guys talked. I listened. I was not in on going against Cas. I have believed him this whole fucking time. Like, he was sticking his whole bloody neck out on the line for him. And then when
they're like pray to Cass to get him to come down, and Cass is like, I didn't go to them because I couldn't ask their questions. But then the demons show up, right, to take them out, and yeah. Cass is like, oh no, demon assassins, I have two choices. I can either let them kill my friends, or I can reveal myself and run the risk of my friends no longer trusting me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number one, the fucking freeze frames are so funny. What a choice. But I do kind of love the way they're utilized to show Cass being like above the concept of time in a sense. It's kind of like the whole span of that fight sequence took maybe 5 seconds, but it's stretched out over probably 30 seconds for the audience because it stops and we get Cass's like inner monologue as he's deciding what to do. So I do kind of like the way they're used. I just think freeze frames are just generally funny.
Yeah, obviously. That's how it works.
And then the pinnacle point that Cass is making is like, of course, Crowley wouldn't like it. But on the other hand, and it is just a still focus on Dean's face for like a solid couple of seconds. And then he's like, they were my friends. And it's like, yeah, that's why.
They.
Yeah, sure. Plural.
Nice to know that Dean's changed his pronouns.
Yeah. Dean canonically they them from this point onwards. Like, it's ridiculous to me that they will focus on Dean singular and then try to be like, they. Like,
oh, but he's like a brother to him.
Oh my God, don't even get me started. Like, later in the episode, Cass literally says, I did it to protect you. And then immediately, I did it to protect all of you. And I'm like, oh, there's that singular to plural again. There it is again. That's something we've seen before. It's something we will see again. Or sometimes in the inverse, plural to singular. And I'm like, man, they really just be putting that in there.
Yeah. There are things that are happening here and they just keep on happening. Like, oopsie doopsies, it's happening.
Oopsie doopsies, you guys, you made them gay. Mm-hmm. I hate to break it to you. Oh, wait, I actually have a very fun meme reference to include you in on. So, do you remember back in the day, peak Tumblr, the post about your OTP and the IKEA furniture?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Destiel version?
No.
Okay. So, literally, for anyone who doesn't know, basically there was this text post on Tumblr that went around and it was like, imagine your OTP trying to build IKEA furniture together. And a lot of people wrote like little fics or like short little drabbles or whatever underneath of their OTPs. The funniest one I ever saw was the Destiel one. And it was literally just like a stick figure cartoon, I think, of Cass and Dean. Yeah. And it literally just said, damn it, Cass, we can fix this. Dean, it's not broken. And it's just the direct dialogue from the episode. And every single time I see that scene, I'm like, oh my God, so tortured and dramatic. But the other part of my brain is like, huh, IKEA. Like, it's maybe the best subliminal marketing of all time. Because I will never see this scene without thinking about IKEA.
Like, I'm assuming this scene was not intended to be an ad for IKEA.
No. It's like, oh, actually, if you look closely in the background, there's one of those giant blue plastic bags. Sam is actually eating meatballs in the background.
And you wouldn't notice because the camera never focuses on...
Exactly.
Instead it focuses on Cass and Dean eye-fucking for a solid 12 seconds.
Oh my God. The dramatic look back when Dean's, like, when they're running out of the building and Dean, like, shuffles Sam and Bobby out the door and then he, like, looks back and Cass looks at him and he looks back. The number of times that I have seen this scene compared with, like, the last look between Han and Leia before Han gets frozen in carbonite or even... Oh my God, I forget the name of the myth, but which is the one where, like, he's not supposed to look back at his wife? Yeah. The number of ways that I have seen that particular sequence of shots compared, and it is ridiculous to look at if it's not supposed to be read as inherently, like, romantic drama. You know, like, that whole argument feels like a breakup, and it's intentional. Like, there's no way that it's not. And the fact that it was written and directed by one person means that they had an intent.
Yeah.
And it was not misconstrued.
It wasn't lost in translation somewhere.
Yeah.
It didn't change between page to filming. Like,
no.
They filmed what they wanted to film. Like, it was as the writer intended.
And they even have, like, in this episode, like, beyond, you know, the text dialogue between Dean and Cass, beyond the shot choices, beyond the fucking raking leaves, whatever else, they also just straight up have Crowley saying shit to Cass, like, Cass says, I'm holding up my end, and Crowley says, ah, yes, but is that all you're holding? See, the stench of that Impala is all over your overcoat, Angel. And it's like, okay, sure, that's a normal thing to say to a person.
To be fair, last time Dean fucked an angel was in the Impala. I'm just saying, connect the dots.
Did you have another point that you would like to go on to?
I want to talk about Cass this episode.
Excellent.
And how it's very interesting that his heaven that he normally chills in is just the eternal Tuesday afternoon of
an autistic man who died in a bathtub in
1933.
Well, I've written down 53. I thought it was 53. It could be 33.
Let's just run a poll. We're not Googling it. Just run a poll. Is it 53 or 33? One of us will be vindicated by popular vote.
Yeah, so that is really interesting for Cass. Did you have a specific point you wanted to make? Or
I just think it's really interesting that he's obviously in autistic coded.
Yes.
But it also feels like they're kind of trying to renege on him being autistic coded. So it's interesting that they've kind of reinforced it here.
I actually don't feel like they've ever tried to renege it. Is there a reason that you feel that?
It just feels like they... I want to be clear here. I don't think it's because they're trying to renege on the autistic coding. I think it's that Sarah Gamble's vision did not include Misha Collins. So I just feel like this season, they've kind of, some of those traits that were really, like, really distinctive of Cass. Like, I don't know if it's just, like, the writing or the acting or what, but it just feels a little, like, softer, if that makes sense.
I think actually what is really interesting about that point is that Dean actually makes a reference this episode that I had to look up because I have never bothered looking it up before. And it was such an overt reference that I was like, I can't skip over this. I need to make sure I know what I'm talking about. What Dean says, this is part of when he is defending Cass to Sam and Bobby. He says, Cass is the bulky Bartokomus, I think is how you pronounce it, of heaven. And I went to Wikipedia and I was like, who is that? And Wikipedia says that he was a character from the television show Perfect Strangers. And I've got his like personality description up from Wikipedia. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. You can go and have a look for yourself if you're really interested. But I'm just going to like point out a couple of things that I did think were interesting having Dean reference Cass as being the equivalent of this. So
especially considering it is a pretty niche reference.
Yeah, like this was not something that was like ultimate pop culture.
They were making a Twilight reference here.
He didn't say Spock. You know, which would have maybe been, like, a more obvious reference. This is very niche. And particularly, like, he gave the full name. Like, he wasn't able to just give a shortened version. He had to give the full name for anyone to even recognize that it was maybe a reference to a character. It says here, Bulky is a naive, optimistic, well-meaning person. The actor once said of his character, he looks at the world like a four-year-old and sees the world as benevolent. The traits, along with his ignorance of American culture, sometimes get Bulky into difficult or dangerous situations, with his cousin invariably coming to the rescue. However, you soon realise that for all of Bulky's naivety and cultural malapropisms, he is otherwise a very intelligent and courageous man of many, many talents who often saves the day himself. And so, like, it goes on to, like, a couple of other bits and pieces, but I think that that sort of covers the general gist of who that character is and why it's really interesting that that is who Dean
characterises Cass as.
Cass to?
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially the sort of idea that Cass is like, he's a bit naive, but like ultimately he can and will forge his own path. And like that is exactly what's happened. Except that unfortunately, Cass is choosing things that the narrative condemns.
Which is really interesting because last time we had any member of Team Free Will team up with Crowley was a good thing. Yeah. It was absolutely fine. It stopped the apocalypse.
I think that what is interesting here is that Cass, from the very beginning of the episode, and actually I wanted to ask you about this, how do you feel about his opening little monologue and his little, like, fourth wall break?
It's an interesting choice that they sort of stylistically went with this one.
Mm.
I don't know how to describe it. It kind of made me think of the finale of last season a lot, which, you know,
they did reference it a fair bit.
Famously, I wasn't a massive fan of, but it's interesting that they've decided to do it this way and sort of which they frame Cass in the same light as Chuck, almost. Like, in the finale of season 5, Chuck was the narrator through which everything was filtered. In this episode, they've made Cass the narrator and through which everything is filtered.
Yeah.
Obviously, tonally, very different.
Yeah.
But it's still really interesting that they did decide to filter this episode through Cass.
Mm.
Because they could certainly have done this episode in a multitude of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting to see that this is how they decided to do it, in which they frame it as coming through Cass before you even kind of know that it's going through Cass, if that makes sense. Like, They haven't given the justification for why Cass is now coming clean and what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he comes clean throughout the episode, and it kind of ends on the point where he's coming clean to the brothers. Like,
yeah.
Because he's been caught out, he can't lie anymore.
You know, and it comes full circle. So, like, the monologue that he starts the episode with is actually the monologue that he ends the episode on. Yeah. Basically, he's just narrating. It's him sitting on that park bench and narrating the whole time. It's just that the audience gets to see the intercuts of what actually happened. With the actors actually acting. You know what?
I reckon we should have just had Cass on a bench the whole time. I reckon that would have been cinema of the highest quality.
They just love putting angels on park benches. I don't know. Particularly, they like putting Misha Collins on park benches, actually.
What can they say? Misha Collins does his best acting on a bench.
It's so specific. Like, in The Great Pumpkin, Sam Winchester and him and Dean have that, like, really intense one-on-one for, like, the first time. He's like, I'm not a hammer like you think or whatever. You know, I have doubts. That was on a park bench. This is on a park bench. Later in the series, we get Misha actually playing a different character, but on a park bench. They just love putting this man on benches.
Oh, do we get Jimmy back?
I guess we'll have to wait and see. What I wanted to sort of point out, actually, first of all, I wanted to point out is right before we get the title card for the episode, we have him looking, like, direct at the camera. Like, we do get an actual fourth wall break, which I think is the first fourth wall break we've had. Like, I think it's, like, the first one that's actually a fourth wall break in full and not just kind of, like, the illusion of breaking into the, like, metaverse kind of thing. I wanted to note something that I haven't actually really noticed before. You know how, like, the title card for this season is the breaking glass?
Yeah.
I always thought it was the French Mistake, like, the breaking through the glass and falling into, like, the TV show. But I was like, oh, the fourth wall is the TV screen.
Mm.
He's literally broke the fourth wall. Like, he looked up at the screen and then the glass smashed. It's literally breaking the fourth wall between you and the characters. Like, he is directly addressing the audience, and that glass shattering is the fourth wall. It's the screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
That's because between seasons 5 and 6, Castiel was actually replaced by actor Misha Collins.
Yeah, the French Mistake, they swapped and they actually never referred it.
Yeah. New headcanon just unlocked.
But yeah, like with Cass, like in that monologue, one of the really important things that he is raising is that he doesn't know if he is making the right choice with his newfound freedom. Through Supernatural in general, and specifically through Kripke, like the concepts of destiny and free will and choice and freedom have been so prevalent. But now this concept of this character who has never truly had freedom before is suddenly given freedom and has no frame of reference for trying to understand what is the right versus wrong thing to do with it, because he's never had to really consider it before. It's not like when he rebelled and he was being told to do something he didn't agree with and so he decided to do the opposite. This is like he has been given all of the choices and now he has to pick one. Like, there is a lot of different avenues he could go down, and it suddenly becomes a lot more complex than just not doing the thing that they're telling you to do.
Mm.
I think that it's just a really fascinating kind of, like, issue for them to bring to the forefront for Cass. And we get it throughout the episode, you know, he says about the Winchesters, they taught me how to stand up, what to stand for, and what generally happens to you when you do. He mentions that he was so full of confidence after they overturned the apocalypse, and, you know, he then looks back and recognizes that really it was arrogance and hubris. And this is something that comes up a lot, you know. He mentions, I did it to protect the boys or to protect myself. I don't know anymore. He says, you know, to the angels when they all ask him, like, oh my God, like Castiel, like, you know, you're back. God raised you, you know. He's like, no one leads us anymore. We're all free to make our own choices and choose our own fates. God wants you to have freedom. And then the angels are like, okay, but like, what does he want us to do with it? And it's like, isn't, that's just it. Like, there is no grand plan anymore because they ruined it. It's like they cut all the strings on the puppets and now the puppets are like,
hanging limp.
Shit. No one's controlling me. Like, I suddenly have this freedom, but I don't know what to fucking do with it.
There's no hand up my ass.
Okay, Jamie. I'm gonna skip straight over that. And then, you know, Cass goes on to say, like, explaining freedom to angels is a bit like teaching poetry to fish. They just don't understand, to the point where Raphael is like, well, the only thing that I know how to do is to course correct.
And it's back on track with the apocalypse, baby!
Back on track with the apocalypse. And, like, obviously, like, Cass can't let that happen. Raphael says they're soldiers. They weren't built for freedom. They were built to follow. And then he says, tomorrow you kneel, Castiel, or you and anyone with you dies. And then it immediately cuts to Cass sadly and invisibly watching Dean. And I'm like, good lord.
Misha Collins really said, let him be gay.
Yeah. And they said no. 9 years later. But like, and look, there are so many quotes through this episode, like, and you sort of see Cass struggling with this concept of freedom and what it means and struggle with having it. Because it's not like you have any kind of plausible deniability of, oh, someone told me to do that. Like, I was only doing my job. I was just following orders. All of a sudden, he's the one who has to make those decisions. And it's not a job that he asked for either. And it's not a job that he was trained for. It's not a job that any of them were. And so then he gives what I think is maybe one of the best lines in Supernatural and one of my favorite quotes from media of all time, which is, freedom is a length of rope and God wants you to hang yourself with it. Whatever Bedland was smoking that day, good lord, man. I love it.
What's so funny to me is the leverage Supernatural shared universe of it all.
Oh, really?
Because Sterling's MO, aka the character played by Mark Shepard, aka Crowley, in Leverage.
Yeah.
His MO is literally described as you give them just enough rope to hang themselves
with.
And then his reply to that is, this time I think there's enough rope for two. So,
yeah.
The batshit inherent shared universe of Leverage and Supernatural is absolutely wild.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, and actually talking on Crowley, one of my other favorite lines this episode is when he is sort of confronting Cass and he's like, I know why you're doing it. You're keeping up the big lie, like the good Cass, the righteous Cass. As long as they believe it, you get to believe it. But I've got news for you, kitten. A whore is a whore is a whore. And something about Crowley and Cass just makes me happy.
Men loving men, hostility.
Hostility, exactly. Then we get more of like Cass and Crowley and like the way they came to work together. And like, you know, I knew who Crowley was, but I was stronger than him, smarter. I see now that I was prideful. And it's like, it's this really reflecting mentality. Like he's really looking back over the decisions he's made and he's recognizing that they weren't made with a clear mind. Like he can tell that he was corrupted by the allure of power, by his own hubris, by his confidence. And he recognizes this as a flaw, but now he's so far in it that there's really no way that he can see to course correct without relinquishing that sort of power, that control that he has, which means that Raphael will now bulldoze it.
What's wild to me, though, is the way that he describes it. Because, yes, I think he is, in his characterization, he is smarter and stronger than Crowley. But he's also a character who's inherently never been tempted before.
Mm.
Because what's the point of tempting an angel? If that makes sense. Like, you're not going to turn an angel, so what's the point of trying to tempt them? He's never had to go against someone like Crowley before.
He says in this episode, like, I'm an angel, you ass. I don't have a soul to trade. Mm. And Crowley is very smart. And Crowley knows that there are things that Cass wants and or needs. And he knows how to make it like a win-win kind of situation.
Or at least appear like a win-win kind of situation.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I really actually want to...
Because it's not about the win-win, it's about the illusion of the win-win.
Yes. And I'm so glad actually that you brought up Sterling, because I want to ask you a question about a quote that we got late in the episode, where Crowley says, you know the difference between you and me. I know what I am. What are you, Castiel? And what exactly are you willing to do?
I'm a thief.
Nate
Ford and I'm a thief.
I know. I was like, Nate Core. I also wanted to bring it up because this is something that we've referenced before, like this complication for Cass where it's like, are you an angel? Are you a human? Like, who are you? What are you? You're not really either. So where do you fit?
Yeah.
And like, this is something that will continue, kind of like Sam and Freak, will continue to be relevant for Cass all the way through the rest of the series. And like, they've mentioned it previously, particularly in season 5, but now it's going to get more relevant to his character arc. I mean, it's pretty clear, like the way that he keeps talking about his own confidence and pride and hubris and it being sort of Icarus flying too close to the sun, really. I am sure it doesn't come as a shock to you that this becomes a particular turning point for his character.
Castiel villain arc.
Castiel's self-esteem issues, who? You know, like he, from this point, I think becomes a little disillusioned with himself and his own ability to make good choices. And I mean, you'll see as the rest of the season unfolds kind of how and why that is, but I don't mind telling it to you because, like, at this point you sort of know the vast majority of the context behind things.
It's like he's understanding now that he made the wrong decisions, but he's too far down the road to turn back. So either he has to try and turn back and hate himself for his decisions, or he needs to just keep going and keep trying to justify in his head that what he's doing is actually correct.
Yeah. Well, there's also like a line where Cass says to Crowley, "You want me to be the new Lucifer?" And Crowley says, "Well, Lucifer was a petulant child with daddy issues." And I was like, okay.
Bold of you to assume he doesn't have daddy
issues. Yeah, I was like, to be fair, Crowley, I don't know if you're not describing Cass. And like, this is the thing, because like Dean has specifically referred to Cass as being like a baby even recently. And later in this episode, we have that argument between Dean and Cass. And again, Cass tries to appeal to Dean. Theoretically, Sam and Bobby are in that same fucking house somewhere. Does not try to talk to either of them. And it was really giving me like 402, that like UST filled interaction in the kitchen.
Mm.
You know, it was kind of recalling that for me. But he says to Dean, "I'm doing this for you and because of you." And Dean comes back with like, "I'm not going to logic you, okay? I'm saying don't just cause. You know, next to Bobby and Sam, you are the closest thing I have to family. And if I'm asking you not to do this, you just have to trust me." And so, yeah, Cass is definitely trying to justify to himself, like, "I'm doing this for you. I'm doing this to protect you. I'm doing this for..."
But we also... for everything that we fought for and we sacrificed for and we...
Exactly. But then in saying that, he's also throughout the episode got this like cognitive dissonance of like, "I don't know who I'm doing it for anymore. It was for them. And there started the road of good intentions," I think he says at one point. He definitely started referring
to, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so he obviously started with these good intentions, as so many characters do. And then it becomes twisted, it becomes complicated, and it becomes harder. And, you know, it's a whole thing.
And you realize you've sold your soul to the devil.
Yes, exactly that. Speaking of which, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the new concept of hell as developed by Crowley?
I think the man is a genius. I think he is by far the smartest millennial being we've ever met. Like, his concept, it's so efficient.
He was giving The Good Place.
I just think the concept of hell as just eternally waiting is just like, it's such an inspired choice on his behalf.
Yeah.
I think it's also exactly what Cass needs to see to agree to what he wants him to do. Like, I don't think it's necessarily like, I definitely think he did some remodels because it's a brilliant way of torture. But also it's the concept of, if I can sell Cass on the concept that hell is not what it used to be, Cass is more likely to work with him.
This isn't the old hell that you thought you knew. This is new hell.
This isn't your grandmother's hell. You know, but... it's just that concept of, like, if Crowley can convince Cass that hell is not that bad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then Cass feels less bad about, like, dooming half of the souls in purgatory to hell.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming the way purgatory normally works is it's some sort of mid-place between, like, heaven and hell. You know, you've got heaven, which is fantastic and beautiful and sunshine and rainbows and butterflies. And you've got hell, which is fiery burning pits of torture, akin to watching Supernatural. And then you've got purgatory, which is in the middle, which is, it's not great, but it could be worse.
Yeah.
So essentially what Cass has agreed to at this point is to doom half of souls in purgatory to torture and hell. Despite the fact they did nothing except be born as monsters and then get in the middle of a political argument between Raphael and Cass, essentially.
Yeah.
So to justify to himself dooming those hundreds of thousands of souls to hell, he needs to justify it as, oh, well, hell's not that bad. They're just going to wait in line. No one likes waiting in line, but like, they're just waiting in line.
They're not being actively tortured like on a rack like Dean was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very different setup.
Which, if you haven't read my fic, and they were soulmates, go visit. I reread it recently, and why is it my least popular Supernatural fic today?
I think it's so funny that you're so pressed about it being your least popular fic. I think it's so funny that you have an opinion on
it.
To be fair, it's a very good fic.
I fucking popped off with this shit. Like, I had my my mission. I was
this is my best work.
I was like, I can make 401 sadder and more gay. And I did it. I achieved that goal. And then just nobody read it.
You being so pressed about no one reading and they were cellmates, but everyone really liking your other more fluffy fics is literally like Arthur Conan Doyle being furious about people liking Sherlock. We'll put all the links below.
We'll put all the links below. I write fic specifically for my friends for their birthdays. If my friends are not expecting a fic at this point, then...
Guys. Guys, it's been foreshadowed.
It's been foreshadowed. I really enjoy it. It's really rewarding. I'm a slut for feedback, so it's great. But it is by far my best writing. My angst fucking slapped and nobody read it. It continues
not
to
nobody.
Be...
nobody.
It continues to be my worst performing supernatural fic.
Yes. No, so I thought that you would like the concept for a while. I really thought you would appreciate it. I personally love it. I think it's phenomenal. I also think it's hilarious because literally 2 days ago, Naomi came home and she was absolutely fuming because she had to submit some paperwork for something. And instead of just being able to like post it or like submit it online, they made her take his ticket and sit in the waiting room for 30 minutes while people did other shit. And then they wouldn't let her leave until they had manually processed the paperwork. And she was losing her mind. This like 5 minute errand ended up taking her probably 2 hours. And she was absolutely so done by the time she got home, and she was just like, you know, having her little vent about it, and I was just sitting there internally being like, Crowley is so right. But I also love Crowley's reasoning, which I don't know if you took a note on.
Was it literally just that nobody likes waiting in line?
It was, but it was also that the problem with the old place was that a lot of them were already masochists. A lot of thank you sir. Which is so fucking funny. He also, in that moment, says to Cass, you've got what they call sex appeal, to which Cass says, thank you, get to the point.
What gets me is we know that canonically Crowley is mad about that because he has
sex appeal
to Dean Winchester.
Exactly.
And, you know, Crowley's not impressed with that.
No. Also, I don't know if you noticed, when Crowley, like, leads Cass off sort of down that side corridor and he's, like, explaining more about purgatory and his actual plan and he's sort of, like, giving him the full rundown and offering him the loan of souls. Did you notice the framed picture in the background?
No.
I didn't think you would because I didn't notice it the first couple of times either. And if anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, you should go back to that scene, which sits at about 29 minutes in. And I know this because I'm looking at a picture I took to show Jamie. But there is a framed picture of Mark Shepherd wearing a Nazi uniform directly behind them while they're having that discussion. And it's huge. It's really, once you know that it's there, it's really hard to miss it. But the fact that it is there, it is the only thing in that whole corridor.
What's really interesting to me is that Mark Shepherd allowed himself to be photographed in a Nazi, like that's, you get to do some weird shit for work, Mark, but like that has to be the weirdest, yeah?
It's bizarre. And like my thought process here is that they're clearly like trying to allude to the fact that like Crowley is like putting himself across as like this, like you said before, like this kind of sort of amenable, like, person who's, like, just trying to be realistic about, like, hell and their prospects. And, like, look at this business that I'm running, basically. And then he's literally got a framed picture of himself.
Yeah.
In his office, essentially, looking like that. And it's like, okay, so maybe he's not as nice as he is presenting himself to be. But, like, it's, for some reason, it's just a set dressing that, while it is huge and obvious, you also don't always notice it.
Well, I saw the picture. I just didn't take note of what it was because I think unless you actually kind of look at it, you can't really tell that it's Mark Shepherd. Like, you have to actually look at it to tell that it's Mark Shepherd and not to just be like, oh, it's a black and white photograph. Like,
and I'm assuming that they photoshopped an existing image and didn't take a whole, like, hour off set to stage that photo.
I mean, I don't know. The CW wasn't really good about allocating their money where it needed to go.
Yeah, good point. Did you have another point that you would like to go down? I have a few left, but they're more singular.
Oh, I did want to make a jokey prediction.
Oh, okay.
We get Cass killing Bobby as a demon, which is interesting, and I think it foreshadows only bad things for Bobby, and I don't like that.
Oh, okay. My note about that was, in all caps, Bamf Cass with 3 fire emojis, because I do love when he goes absolutely ape shit on those demons.
You're right, he is a bat for that moment, but it's also like it's really ominous. It's the demon equivalent of Bobby, and Cass just goes in and kills him, and then Bobby basically makes Cass an enemy by the end of the episode.
Interesting.
Like, the dots are dotting.
Just like Nightmare in season one.
Yeah, the dots are dotting. This is actually what it was.
I still can't get over that. Okay, I did want to about a particular line we did get from Bobby this episode, mm-hmm. that you just reminded me of, where he says to the demon that they're trying to interrogate, and he goes, I don't know whether to kill you or kiss you. And then I had in brackets, Sam, every time he meets a female presenting demon. I was just like, that's literally just Sam's internal monologue.
Bobby, anytime he meets Crowley. He has kissed the demon before. It's an established character trait at this point.
It's also like Dean in that barn in 401.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you if mm-hmm. you had any thoughts on, like, sort of, we got some heaven lore in this episode. Yeah. Like, we mentioned before about Cass favouring the eternal Tuesday afternoon of the autistic man who drowned in a bath. So we get the specific lore this episode that each heaven is quite individual. We'd seen in Dark Side of the Moon, like, obviously, that those heavens were individual and they were sort of traipsing through them.
Yeah.
But this is, like, we get to see sort of more of a...
general person's heaven. Yeah. Because we saw Sam and Dean's, and we also saw, like, Ashes, which was the bar.
Yeah.
But we don't really see too much of other people's heavens in Dark Side of the Moon.
And the way that Dark Side of the Moon is sort of framed is, like, obviously Sam and Dean are sort of continuously following the theme of a road. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly moving, whereas, like, this episode, I feel like, gives this sort of idea of a more stationary concept of heaven, where it's like, oh, you really are in your, like, sort of secular little pods rather than...
your little bubble.
It's like you each have your own little sort of Truman Show type set up, but it is really just an individual. Because the other thing about Dark Side of the Moon is, like, Sam and Dean are so often together, or there are other people present in their memories, because they're not in their heavens as such. They're kind of, like, traveling through possible heavens, through memories. Whereas this episode is like, okay, this is this guy's specific heaven. Like, this is the memory he stays in.
It is also interesting to me, though, that it seems like, obviously, Cass is hanging out in some random dude's heaven. It's interesting to me that they didn't establish that, like, angels don't get their own heaven. They just...
yeah.
So it's like, I've got to assume that Cass is different. And we know this. Cass is different. That is well and truly established by canon at this point.
Yeah.
I think it might be unusual for angels to hang out in specific people's heaven. Like, yeah. I think they're normally just, like, chilling in the void.
I would agree with that assessment based in, like, future context that we get. You typically don't see angels interacting with people.
Or in, like, specific people's heaven. Like,
yeah.
Because, like, Cass isn't interacting with the guy whose heaven it is.
True.
He's just chilling there. But it also just seems, like, I feel like most angels would deign it sort of beneath.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because we don't actually know. And, like, at this point anyway, there is no clear-cut place where angels go when they die. Mm. We get further context, you know, down the road.
Do they go to purgatory with all the monsters?
Well, I guess we'll have to find out. But we don't have a they stay in heaven. And we don't have a they go to hell. And we haven't had it specifically said that they go to purgatory. Because we also don't typically class angels as monsters. Even though they are not human, they're not sort of put in that same category.
Because they were created by God and not by Eve. They're not technically classed as a monster.
Yeah, like they're a creature, but not specifically a monster, regardless of their, like, moral integrity, I guess.
Creature, gender non-specific.
Yeah. You know, well, yeah, actually. So, you know, it is interesting to see them, like, hanging out in people's heavens. Oh, and another line that I just really like in this episode that I didn't mention before is, don't step on that fish, Castiel. Big plans for that fish. Yeah. Like, I just kind of really enjoy that line, like, the concept of the ripple effects and, like, the planning and everything that had gone into the world as per Supernatural canon. And then, like, in the end, like, if Cass had stepped on the fish, it wouldn't have mattered because shit didn't go down the way it was supposed to anyway. But, like, I think that this is, like, a really interesting conceptual way to see how old Cass actually is and really kind of visualize how long he has been around for. Because up to this point, it's really easy, I think, to forget that he is this ancient eternal being and not just, like, some silly guy in a trench coat.
I do want to confront you right now, though, because you have been really severely gaslighting me.
Have I?
I think it's really fucking rude of you.
Okay.
You've told me that we never get to meet Cain and Abel, both of them. We do. We see both of them this episode.
Oh my God, you're so right.
And Abel do both appear in Supernatural, and I think it's really fucking rude that you're gaslighting me into thinking that we only ever get came.
Oh my god, they actually did cast Abel. Everyone just forgot. Just like Adam. What is it about brothers with names starting with A? Oh, we just forget them.
But no, so we do. So you... There you go.
I'm so sorry. To be fair, that's actually the fandom gaslighting me because I fully did not even register that.
There is my contribution to fandom for this episode. You're wrong. They do cast Abel. Oh, the truth is revealed.
I have a guess for your PSA, ooh, which I'm just now realizing we haven't done yet.
No, we haven't done yet. That was my next point that I was going to move on to. But if you've got a guess, go ahead, share with the class, Bethany.
Okay. I don't quite know how to word it, so like, give me a sec. I've got a concept, but okay. I haven't got a sentence.
Well, I do normally speak in sentences.
Mm, typically, it's preferred. Yeah. Mm. Oh, okay. Here's a really simple way of saying it. Don't mansplain. And the reason that I've got that as this week's PSA guess is because of the line, "You know who spies on people, Cass? Spies." Number one, I love that line. I think it's hilarious, but it's also like, Dean, sweetie, baby. You probably could have been a little bit more creative. It's literally like, do you know who whines, Cass? Babies. It's like, we've had this. You've done it.
It's done. It's been done. Not my PSA this week.
Yeah, I was assuming.
Probably unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
Are you ready for it though?
Never.
Okay. My PSA this week is always think about the terms and conditions on a loan before you take it out. Because I think this week, Cass really just didn't do his due diligence.
He did not read the fine print.
He didn't read the fine print. He didn't ensure that the loan was suitable for him. And so now he's been saddled with a loan that he really shouldn't have gotten in the first place. Like,
yeah.
If there was some sort of like responsible lending body in hell, Crowley surely would have been fine for this one.
This is going to fuck up his credit score.
Exactly. There is no way that he can pay those souls back. There is no way. Like, he got...
Without committing crimes.
Yeah, like... Which is just, you know, generally frowned upon.
Oh my god, that's the other thing you were right about. Castiel war crimes, question mark.
War crimes, full stop.
She just gave thumbs me a up. Thumbs up. You just said war crimes and then gave me a thumbs up.
But yes, war crimes, Castiel, I was correct on that.
Absolutely, you were correct on that front. Speaking of which, towards the end of the episode, when... I'm just moving right along from that. When... Cass and Dean are chatting at Bobby's. There is a single red light lit over Cass's head,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really interesting as like a halo-esque image.
Yeah.
That has obviously been tinted by hell, and like they are in the red room that I've talked about a lot, like being associated with.
Oh yeah,
Sam Sam's through season four. Yeah. And like again, like at the beginning of the episode, like Sam and Bobby are interrogating the demon within the red room in the library, and then mm-hmm. when Dean arrives, he pulls them into the kitchen to mm-hmm. try and sway them that Cass is on their team. Again, the red room representing Sam.
Yeah.
And the green room representing Dean and the heart of the house and the information in the house. Like, it's just, it's an ongoing theme, but I like to point it out because I am obsessive.
Wow, who could have predicted
not
that?
Not to psychoanalyze myself on a supernatural podcast that I spend too much of my free time on. But yeah, I feel like it's safe to say I'm a little bit obsessive. Just a smidge.
Yeah, I'm sure November 5th had no impact on you at all.
November 5th had no impact on my psyche whatsoever. I don't know what you're talking about, Jamie.
You were totally fine and normal about it.
November 5th? Who?
Wait, was something happen on November 5th?
Something happened? Well, 6th for us, so...
Yeah.
But November 5th has a better ring to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think, unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about...
Ooh, let me double check. Look, we've already talked about Cass's fixation on Dean this episode. But, like, even in the fact that he just smites Dean, like, the demon that's attacking Dean first.
Yes. Like,
and at any opportunity, he's just staring at Dean.
I know, so sadly and invisibly.
And what's so funny to me is Sam blamed himself a lot for some of the things that happened in the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time he should actually be able to blame himself for something that happened in the apocalypse. Because if he didn't say to Dean, "I want you to go to Lisa and blah, 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 blah," Cass wouldn't have felt any guilt about dragging Dean back into the light.
So you're saying this is Sam's fault?
So this is Sam's fault.
And an episode about how Cass is making poor decisions and is feeling really conflicted about his morality. It's Sam's fault.
Yeah, if Sam didn't force Dean to retire, then Cass would have gone to Dean instead of going to Crowley.
So you're telling me that actually the problem is society's fascination with the concept of the nuclear family and heteronormative standards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Sam pushing the heterosexual agenda is actually the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
If Sam just let Dean be queer, it'd be fine.
Oh, good lord, that's so
him funny. And Cass would probably be running a B&B in Vermont by now.
Oh, you're so right.
There we go. Jamie's unhinged take for the day.
That'll be going in the episode description. Anyway.
An unhinged take a day keeps the doctor away.
Keeps my psychologist in business. Oh, speaking of you making silly jokes, mm-hmm. Also the line when Cassiel asks Raphael, are you joking? And he goes, do I look like I'm joking? And Cassius goes, you never look like you're joking. I just, something about that line, I just...
At least he's not out here trying to call him the funniest angel in the garrison.
Oh my god, you'll never get over that, will you?
I will never get over that, no. I am objectively correct about that, so I will never not be insufferable about it. Rip to you, but I'm different.
Anyway, I think that does bring us to the end of today's episode. So, Jamie, how would you rate 620, The Man Who Would Be King, out of 5?
I think I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It was a solid episode. It was fun to watch. I don't think I can give it more because as much as I did enjoy a lot of the plot reveals, some of the flashback sequences did fully kill me. I was like, oh, this is a choice. Like, you complain a lot about the flashbacks in Leverage. And I'm like, okay.
Don't even try and equate. Sorry, no, I will not take it. I will say that they're not great, but I will not have you put them on equivalent.
Like, the quality is better, but they do rehash it a lot. They're like, oh, here we go. Have it again. And from a different angle. And again.
I think that's maybe just an effect of it being, like, a television show, like, appealing to a general audience. So if someone was tuning into this episode... Because can you imagine watching this episode with no fucking context? It would make zero sense. Like, if you'd missed a couple of episodes or you'd, you know, had only just started watching the show, this would be coming out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
So you do need the reason.
Sarah Gamble's master plan would have been lost on you.
Yeah. And we can't have that.
Sarah Gamble was running for a binging era when binging wasn't a thing. She was ahead of her time.
She's manifesting the long con and she was not going to let you forget it.
She's really out here just, like, girl bossing her way too close to the sun. You know what I mean? Like,
we love to see it.
Yeah.
Okay. The next episode is titled Let It Bleed. Do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, fears, or predictions?
So, I think we're now going to lean fully into Castiel's villain arc.
Okay.
I do think we're going to get Cass next week as well. They've kind of established Cass at this point as, like, the main villain of the season. Like,
along with Crowley, I guess.
Yeah. Like, Raphael is the main villain of the season because he's the one who even pushed Cass to this point.
Yeah.
But at this point...
We don't interact with Raphael.
We don't interact with Raphael. And we're not being told that Raphael is making dodgy decisions like Cass is. You know what I mean? So I think we can kind of assume that they're framing Cass as the sort of main villain of the season at this point. So it will be interesting to see what they do in terms of wrapping up that storyline. But I definitely think we're going to get some more war crimes from Cass, which is always fun. But I definitely think that an alliance like the one that Crowley and Cass has is not meant to last. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they kind of do between Crowley and Cass because, yeah, I don't think it's sustainable long-term for them to work together. Like, I think their peace is kind of tenuous at best. And, you know, like, Crowley is, for all intents and purposes, a loan shark. And now the loan is coming past due. It'll be interesting to see what sort of actions Crowley can take to make Cass deliver on his promises. Because, like, at the end of the day, he loaned him those 50,000 souls with the assumption that he would be getting them back plus interest.
Yes.
And not only has Cass not returned the 50,000 souls, he has not returned the interest either.
And also Sam and Dean keep being a problem for Crowley, so that doesn't help.
And Castiel keeps on refusing to let him kill them.
Okay, so that just about does it for today's episode. Hopefully you haven't had as much fun at listening as we have had recording. If you wanted to get in touch with us, all of our social media links are in the descriptions below and possible topics for conversation could include...
Did you think that a Castiel villain arc was coming before you hit this point or was this something that kind of like really wildly took you by surprise sort of between last episode and this episode?
Actually, that's a really good question. I remember watching this episode for the first time and feeling like my entire world had just been turned upside down. Not so much because I didn't see the, like, Cass, you know, doing dodgy stuff behind the scenes thing coming, but just, like, the way it was presented and, like, the fact that we got so much information about what was happening. I feel like that was the bit that really, like, threw me for a loop. Like, oh my god, look at all the things and, you know, being able to tie it back. But I'm really interested, now that Jamie knows what the 612 phenomenon is, I would be so fascinated to hear if any of you have thoughts on it, if any of you have found other occurrences of it that I've missed, Or if you think I'm full of shit and have a really great argument as to why that is, I would also love to hear it. Because I'm just so excited about this theory and I've been dying to talk about it for so long and I haven't been able to. Although, do you see now why I was making you leave the room? Because I was like, I don't know how the fuck I'm supposed to discuss this without being so explicit about what I'm talking about. I hope you understand.
Look, I definitely think there's a way you could have done it, but I definitely think it would have been a lot of like a, like, come talk to me on Discord sort of thing about like...
The only other way that I was going to do it is be maybe like just make a bunch of notes and then in this episode be like, oh my God, I've been wanting to talk about it and just bring it all up then. But I was just so excited about it. I couldn't hold it in. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully we have you back next week for Let It Bleed. Bye. Bye.